it would only be with very good reason. That reason would be transmitted back to you.
But given that the thing which really bothers me is that the society is apparently supposed to be moving towards a more open, more transparent method of governance. And my first reaction to some of the comments that I could draw upon from the meeting that our chairman had with the Board of Trustees was, these people don't really want us poking and prying into the darkest corners of the society.
To the very best of my knowledge, the society has no dark corners. I would however hope that if there are, this board will shine a torch in there. I'm to say metaphor, aren't we? Is that a metaphor or simile? It's a simile. But language such as dark corners, sort of as though it was well known that there were dark corners, I think intemperate and don't serve you well.
Could I put a perspective on it?
Yeah,
because I think in terms of, my particular bit was the internal law. It may be a different perspective from some of the external side of it. But my position would be that any report that we had and any recommendations or actions have actually been bought off by the people who are being audited. So there is something which is an open door within the society. And if it's not an open door, then that actually will have to be part of the buy-off, and maybe there's an escalation process that goes on, certainly through this board, before it would go to public. And I think, I don't know how the reports would be viewed, but I think, in terms of certainly if it was a PLC type of thing and the board were not taking on board the recommendations of the audit, the internal audit, it would be comply or explain. So in essence, it's a spring-loaded agree, and if you like, the expectation, the exception is that the board can, for whatever reason would be that the board can bounce some of the actions, but then the explanation would go on, but actually there is a record there, because in essence the thing, it almost feels like if we write a report and the board of the trustees don't like the recommendation, it's going to be suppressed. And I think for what for me would be uncounselable would be that actually having written a report and the group of auditors come up with some recommendations, those are the records. Now, if other people don't wish to take on board those records, that's fine. That's where the comply and explain bit comes into it. But if you like, to me, that spring loads the thing somewhat the other way.
Yeah, I don't personally, and I have to be very careful speaking personally and as chairman. We don't have cabinet rules as a board of trustees. But personally, I don't have a problem with your concept. What I do think is, I don't think I could get that past the board of trustees. I think they will want to not accept that spring loading. I'm happy to try, but I can't actually think of, because you haven't actually started doing your reviews yet. But I can't think of the sort of things. Can anyone think of an example of something that you think you might come up with that you think we might disagree with?
Perhaps I can just say a little bit about process here, in the sense of when you carry out, I'm sure we've all carried out audits, but at the end of the audit, we should have a close-out meeting where the likely areas of recommendations are discussed as to the extent that they should be taken forward. That should be done
with the members of staff.
With the members of staff, absolutely. Because there may be certain things that are not practical or not relevant. But once you'll be on that point and you are making recommendations, we then have to be in that comply or explain regime. And bearing in mind what you said earlier on, I think it's incredibly important that if, for whatever reason, the Board of Trustees doesn't agree to a recommendation, it does have to explain its reason why. And that has to be on the record. And that's partly to protect the Board of Trustees.
Exactly. Okay. Else. I am, and I've already said, I am completely happy with comply or explain. The Board of Trustees does not have to accept that. The Board of Trustees does not have to accept anything. The Board of Trustees is sovereign within the charity.
Nobody's arguing with
you. But I am more than happy to try and set up a culture of supply, comply or explain. I'm looking at Paul. Do you think I'd get that passed?
Yeah, I can't, honestly, Phil, I can't think of an instance. Thinking about the board itself, who it's made up of, the type of people who we want on our Board of Trustees, the way the board works, I can't think of a situation where there wouldn't be some formal setting down an explanation as to why a recommendation would be taken up.
But in that case, Paul, why are you using this language, which we simply find so difficult, about light touch, terrible expression in this context, proportionate, don't really know what it means. Oh, well, it's best practice, so we better have one. I mean, it's all sending me the entirely, and I think my colleagues here, the wrong signals. If the trustee board don't understand what the role of an audit committee is, well, we've got a problem. I mean, we may as well go about it because we're wasting our time. And I'm afraid that's the position we feel we have been manoeuvred into.
One of the points I made at the trustees meeting, if you recall, was to say that in assembling this board, and we had a bit of a false start, but once we got an advocate person out, we actually got people with quite wide expertise, both industries and charities, in auditing and compliance. We actually, I think, are an incredibly valuable asset to the society.
However, I agreed with you said that.
Yeah. However, if we are not going to be allowed or expected to audit in the way that people would normally audit in an organisation or a charity, because the trustees don't perceive that is what is required for this type of organisation, I can't see how I can get this board to want to put their head on the block and their professional reputation forward when they know that they will identify risks, put that to the trustees, and they may well be thrown out for reasons that only the trustees would know.
But that hasn't happened yet.
I can't
see how that would happen. I really can't. And Philip, I can't remember whether it was you or Graham originally had the idea of the audit committee, but it's one of the two of you. And so how it was all set up, you were intimately involved in the setting up of it. So, yes, we see you as an asset. Light touch. Actually, I completely understand what light touch means, because it's well used in audit speak. I completely understand.
By whom?
Different language. And I completely understand the concept of proportionality. Because we are an incredibly the sort of audit work, and you do understand it, I know you do, the sort of audit work undertaken by an internal audit committee in a large PLC with 8 or 10 people, 8 or 10 staff, would be entirely not proportionate for a £5 million charity with 40 members of staff. So what I would hope to achieve from today is for you to understand that the trustee body wants to have an audit committee, that we want you to start by however you like, but if I was sitting in your chair, I would have an overview of the whole society, see if there's any areas that look a bit, might be not going too well, and focus in on those, but that's entirely up to you.
We have an audit plan. We have three subcommittees, one for finance, one for internal auditing, one for external auditing. Each has produced out of that plan, which is basically...
That's an awful lot of auditing. But if that's what you want to do, but again, we have...
That's simply identified the three areas that need to be looked into. And the audit plan came out of the risk register to say, what's our prioritisation of the risks to the society, and what's the order in which we're going to start to address these?
Fine. I've not had sight of that, I don't think. If I have, I've forgotten it.
In terms of when you've used the word proportionate, I mean, again, I would be comfortable if you related that to risk, and I would see it as entirely appropriate. There is a tension between this committee and the ACB in terms of what those risks are, because in terms of us being able...
Sorry, this committee is the ACB.
Yes, and the Board of Trustees.
In that there is a healthy tension there as to where those risks are, because in terms of the trustees saying you see these as a high risk and we see those as a high, that these something different as a high risk, then that is, you know, that is where the comply and explain comes in from both sides, and hopefully it will mutually enlighten the whole thing. But in terms of the proportion, I mean, clearly if something is perceived as high risk.
Sorry,
Coo. Yeah, sure.
The camera, are you?
No, that's all right. I'm just trying to make sure I remember who everybody is. That's all.
In terms of then something that is high risk to the society, then, you know, I would see it as our role to pursue that, to shine a light on it, to the extent that the risk is understood and appropriately mitigated. Well, at least is understood, and then, you know, the appropriate mitigation can take place. You know, that tension around where we go and how long has really got to be about what we perceive as the risks to the society.
I struggle with saying we light touch audit. Audit is done in a setup by best practice. I think the light touch comes in our recommendations that for a small organisation with very limited resources, we may well say, yep, we'd like to do that, we can't, but we accept that this is now a risk, and that's the mitigation. If that's what you mean by light
sensible
touch, but not
I'm blurred by this problem with light touch. The Engineering Council uses it all the time, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. I mean, I'll be honest as well, the trustees, they agreed to not use light touch and use proportion instead. So I think we should drop the discussion to that.
But I think Graham's picked up on a very good point, which is because I think our perception is you would like us not to look too much into finance, not to look into too much areas. You're applying the light touch to what the audit would be rather than the light touch to the recommendation.
The finance, let's take finance to one side and talk about that. We have, over the years, been very well served by a number of honorary treasurers or finance director, they've used different names. I think you had two job titles in your 7 years of doing it. Find out what it should have been. Yeah. And that person has chaired a finance committee, and prior to the new governance, really the only audit that was done within the society was done by that then board, now committee. And we have been around, the trustees have been around the loop a couple of times and are quite clear in their own mind that having and our present chair of the finance committee is Joel Hilton, who is an accountant. The financial side of the financial audit, that's going to stick with the finance committee.
Yes.
But how the relationship works between the financial side and all the other non-directly financial audit, that sticks with you. Everywhere else, risk, procedures,
I don't know. Can I think of something off the top of my head? Difficult. We're currently just moving across to fully electronic voting for council. I'm not suggesting for a second that that would be an area to explore, but I could understand if someone said, well, let's look at that, and is it working or something like that. That, anything else that you want to do, you're open to do.
But there's an important distinction, I think. If you said the Finance Committee is asked to approve 100k on IT, they would look at the financial issues of that. Our job would be to say, is that a risk to the society? Are we going to give money to a developer who may go bankrupt? Have we looked at competitive tenders and all those things? We are just intending to go and say, are there processes in the society that protect it from that risk?
Happy for you to look at the process.
And the Finance Committee are just there to approve the spend and look at that side of it largely. They are not auditing the processes. Our job is to audit that the Finance Committee have actually made sure that they haven't just gone out to some fly-by-night supplier who goes bust next week. And if that's not what you want us to do, we ought to stop. Because that's the distinction we see. The Finance Committee approving finance and managing the finances, but us looking at the processes and procedures to make sure that you're not risking anything for the society.
But the Finance Committee currently, and I think we did it in Philip's period, would look to make sure the Finance Committee don't go out, the staff go out, the staff get the tenders. The role of the Finance Committee is to ensure that the staff have got appropriate tenders. So in that sense, one of the things you're saying that you would expect you to be doing on the Finance Committee is already away from that, because the Finance Committee are not members of staff. They sit on top of, so you have a normal organisation, and entirely above that, you've got the Finance Committee. So what I don't want to agree to, but what I'm going to suggest that we open things up as far as we can, but what I don't want to agree to, because it will get written down and go into, it'll be chiseled into the lumps of concrete, that you, as the Audit Committee, can audit what the Finance Committee are doing from a finance side, because they are the auditors, and you don't normally, Harvey's been quite clear on this, you wouldn't normally expect to double-check that.
Well, can I ask you a simple question? Who pledges...
Andrew, I've known you for 20 years, you've never asked me a
let me ask you a complicated question, but hopefully one that gets to another issue. Who provides the assurance to the Board of Trustees for the adherence of financial processes? Is that the Finance Committee, or is it the Audit and Compliance Board? In every other organisation, it's the Audit and Compliance Board, and what we're saying in this organisation is the Finance Committee.
Because they could be called the Financial Audit Committee just as easily.
No, it doesn't audit. I mean, you're not really representing what it actually does. It doesn't carry out an audit function. It appoints auditors to do the external audit within very clearly defined terms. It then takes back the results of that audit in the form of the management letter, which quite often, as you remember, does highlight certain areas, and they say, is there anything else you'd like us to look at? And we say, yes, look at VAT, look at membership subscriptions, look at something like that. But it's very tasked to do specific things like that. But it is not providing what I think this board can provide, which is an offline review, analysis, whatever, of what is being done. It doesn't do that. I mean, if you remember, that the agenda for a finance board is usually, last period's results, investments, capital expenditure the next year, those sorts of things. It doesn't go into any detail. I mean, the only processes we go into, I seem to remember, are we have financial authorities, obviously.
Yes.
So you can't sign off on some expenditure more than a certain amount without two signatures, that type of thing. But that's something we could possibly look at, because it is an area where you get fraud, it is an area where if you've not got good processes, you can start hemorrhaging money. So although I, you know, I have every confidence in the finance director, I mean, Tony Holmes is a good guy, I have every confidence in Jed Middleton, but we might just look at the financial authorities and think, does that actually stack up? Applying the experience we've got in other organisations, and there's quite a lot of experience in other organisations around here, so let's see if that's actually a good set of financial authorities or not.
Just to pick up one other issue, if I may, this issue of financial audit. What it appears that we've got at the moment is a finance committee that is actually a finance board in a classic sense that Phil just described, with an additional set of responsibilities for financial audit. And in every other organisation, the additional set of financial responsibilities for audit would sit in your audit committee. So we've drawn a line, and we've drawn the line perhaps in the wrong place.
I understand what you say.
Can I just ask you, can I just go back to asking the kind of fundamental question then? Is the fundamental role of the finance committee just to act as what we would normally refer to as a...
We will... Everything non-finance, we will accept...
I'm going to
come back to finance.
I'm saying non-finance. Finance comes into so many things.
But everything non-finance... We will move across to a more formalised accept or explain. And because there are going to be sensitivities with the finance committee, and there will be, because just as you believe that you can do all the things, I know the finance committee believes that they're doing most of these things. So let's run the two in parallel and see whether we can sort out a sensible way forward. And the best way to do that, David, I would suggest, would be for you to do, and I don't want to be here when you're discussing it, of course, for you to decide what you as a board want to do in the area of finance, and see what we get to.
I think Phil's right, finance comes across everything. If we take setting the membership fees, it's not our role to say whether it's right or wrong, but it is the finance committee's role to look at the budget for the year and the expected income and the impact of setting those fees. So that's the sort of thing that they will look at. Our auditing role is to say, and what do you actually do as a society when you set those fees? Do you just put a finger in the air and guess, or do you actually do some work to make sure that the risk to the society is mitigated? That's all. That's all
I can give you a superb answer to that particular question. I'm completely happy with that sort of thing. We're all completely happy with that sort of thing.
Because the one word that's not come out, which certainly, I mean, is controls. Because to me, this board is about, are the appropriate, proportionate, yes, adequate controls in place in all of the areas, yes, finance included. You could even, in those approaches, I mean, light touch might be appropriate because it comes back to risk. And if this board is given the remit to look at all of the controls across the company on a proportionate risk basis, I think that's certainly what gives me the comfort. And then if we see that there is, because I think our recommendations will be relative to the controls, they're not going to be relative to the finance figures or anything else. Are there appropriate controls?
I don't disagree with a single word of what you said there.
Not a single word.
Okay,
well,
that's
hopefully then we are on
the
same
page.
So,
I think Paul, I'm trying to say, I've just come back to, I mean, using that example where controls are set down, and to answer Andrew's question about financial processes, we have financial processes set out in, probably not the right term, but in our financial regulations, which are owned by the Board of Trustees and to which the Finance Committee and the Finance staff work to. So you couldn't imagine a scenario, could you not, where the Board of Trustees, we talk about the Audit and Finance Board recommending things, but actually it's a two-way process, isn't it? That the Board of Trustees could ask their board, the Audit and Finance Board, to look at their regulations, i.e. their financial processes,
which include the sort of thing that we within the Board of Trustees, envisage. I've been a trustee of the society for over 20 years. It never ceases to amaze me that
something happens, and I think no one's ever thought about that one before. And you would be the obvious people to, ahead of it appearing, potentially as an issue, to think, well, what haven't yet people thought about?
I mean, because Tony, I mean, as Andrew and Phil know, I mean, Tony now, we go out to third-party suppliers and providers, and they do that according to the process set out in the financial regulations,
yeah.
And not for the record, but if you were to ask me when was the last time someone audited those processes, probably not for 5-6 years, I think that, but...
I can't. Well, you
so,
sit back as chairman of the. I can't remember. We
longer than I care
to.
So there's
yeah.
an obvious one there. For
yeah.
This
yeah.
Or perhaps.
Yeah.
I think there's a very obvious one that we should look at. If there was going to be this large project, we should be taking that project before any decisions are made and tearing the backside out of it to make sure all the risks have been addressed, both financial and non-financial. That's my view of what an audit committee should be doing. Give you as the Board of Trustees absolute assurance that all the possible risks, because if it's a construction project, for God's sake, these things have a habit of overrunning.
Yeah.
But there's sort of an admission there that there aren't appropriate controls in
no,
place.
No, we're making certain that all of that, independently, that's all being considered. To provide
I mean, clearly it's risk-based. I mean, that's
always
comes back to it.
So, I mean, I have had experience where a contract was let. We were refused access to the contract. As it turned out, the amount of money that went down the pan because of a very poorly written contract was just unacceptable. And the trustees nearly did go to jail. And I don't want that to happen. I'm sure it wouldn't.
No, I prefer not to go to jail.
No,
on balance.
There are some nice jails.
I'll go to your superior knowledge.
I'm keen to keep my eye on the clock.
Yeah.
And there's two things I'd like to do before we finish with this this agenda item, Phil. One is to just go briefly through the report that came back, because there are one or two things I think I'd like to just clarify.
I don't have a...
And I'd like to just spend 5 minutes on that, and then I'd like anybody to, and hasn't had a chance to say what they'd like to say, to speak up. The particular point I picked up on, because I think we've covered some of the other points, was point 9, in which it was suggested by Sir John Riley, but I think agreed by the trustees, that the executive should initiate areas and forward their suggestions to the ACB. The areas that they would like to see audited. Now, I can't see how that would work. I think if I was not wanting the auditors to look at something, I wouldn't tell them to go look into it. And it just doesn't seem right for auditing. We should be identifying the risk to the society and then going off and finding out what the society does, the processes and procedures, to handle and cope with those risks.
Okay, I agree with both of you. In that I completely agree that the audit committee must have a responsibility for deciding at what it's going to look at. But again, I think it's entirely appropriate that if a member of staff thinks that there's weaknesses in a particular area,
right.
that
yeah.
they seek your
yes.
help. And that's all Sir John was looking to say.
But
so,
okay, that's not implied.
That's quite
implied. I mean, Graham, you recognise the name, of course. I mean, he was president of your old institution. I mean, this is something that came from Sir John as almost what he considered the best practice in professional engineering institutions,
yeah.
certainly institution that he was once president of, the
yeah.
IET.
That is not the way the IET.
Okay,
let's be quite certain. What's written there is what was intended to be said and what was agreed.
Yeah.
Any requirement areas of auditing would be proposed by the executive to the trustees. Don't be caught out in 2 minds about what that means.
My experience is the staff executive can propose, but also the Board of Trustees can propose. And there are three players in setting up the audit programmes, trustees, the staff and ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's not exclusively along that line.
Yeah.
I think it's a point of clarification that number 9 could actually be quite worrying, and I'd really like to see your agreement that what I think the way really Graham explained it, that's the situation as you see it.
Who wrote this? What you could.
You did.
What you could say, perhaps.
And did you write it? Sorry, did you write it for me or for David?
Yes.
His signature's on
it. This is what's in the minutes.
Yes.
Of the
Board of Trustees.
Board of Trustees.
I mean, what you could do, Phil, is say.
Just clarify that the next. We've got a board meeting on the 12th of March.
Yeah. I mean, what you could add is they could be proposed to the executive. Of course, I sit on the executive, and you can propose things through me up to the Board of Trustees, because I sit on this board. So there is a means of this board being able to propose errors of auditing through me.
No, it's direct chairman to the...
Because otherwise you don't have the independence. You lose the independence.
I think all we need to do is find, and I can't... Should to could almost does it. I'm a bit wary of removing words. They quite. But I think all we need to do there is to make it quite clear that was an additional way of finding things, and not the only way of finding things. I don't because I was at the meeting and I know what John meant. I don't read it the way that you read it, but I can understand the way you read it, David. So we just need to clarify.
We'll turn that to the trustees.
Yeah, I think or it will also give you personally some protection, because then you're not the filter.
We
cannot have a staff member as filter.
From this board?
From between the trustees and the ACB.
Okay.
The board have to have access directly, the two boards have to have access one to the other, without... it could be through you, but it would be entirely inappropriate and unfair to ask you to act as a filter.
We'll take that back.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Are there any other questions arising from those notes that you would like to raise?
Maybe it's a small point. I'm just rereading 10. I think controls would be better than the processes. Because to me, I mean, in terms of auditing, staff ought to be all doing self-auditing on processes and things, and we're just looking at the control model.
I'd be very happy to accept change that to processes and controls, because the two things are different. I can well see
in that piece. That's the terminology I use in that suggestion to your annual report.
Are there any other concerns or issues that anybody would like to raise with the chairman and the trustees while we've got this undivided attention?
On this topic?
You've got me here.
This is about to be AOB at this point.
So, are there any questions on this or any other items that we haven't discussed? Is that pretty standard for my interview?
You mentioned going. Wholly electronic voting. Do you really mean if you haven't got access to a terminal, you can't vote?
No, I didn't mean that.
No. So that we still have the option of paper voting.
What we've done, Graham, for this year, last year we went to kind of hybrid electronic paper.
Yeah.
This year everyone has an email address, we'll be given a chance to vote online. If you don't have an email address, you'll be sent a letter inviting you to go online.
And if they decline?
And if they decline, you can send in a paper ballot.
Right, that's fine. Yeah.
What it is, we say 100% electronic, of course, we'll never quite get there.
Point, yes.
I think by very much case the exception that we'll be able to send out almost a handwritten code.
You probably that.
So everyone.
I completely fail to understand the IET ballot paper each year. I mean, I'm a member of the IET, and I get this enormous document with hundreds of different categories. Like,
I'll leave that to you, Greg Johnson.
That's because we work for all positions that the government's responsibility.
Absolutely.
But that's 100% audit performance.
So that's good, yes, because it saves an awful lot of money.
That's a secondary consideration. The primary consideration was the expectation that it would increase the percentage of people voting, and it took it up by about 60%. It's still not high.
No, but it's incredible.
Nature of charitable organisations, they don't get many people voting.
But it was a huge increase, which is great because
it's all about
engagement with the members.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
David.
No.
You.
No. By time, thanks.
Whilst I'm here, does anyone have any questions about anything outside the audit committee? Anything about the society outside the audit committee that they want to ask me? While you've got me.
Could I ask what the proportion of members of the society that belong to local branches is?
I don't think I know that figure off the top of my head.
It used to be in the region of about 4,000.
But that's not a proportion, that's a number. What I can tell you is that with one or two sad exceptions, most of the branches are currently enjoying a real purple patch. The branch that we both work so closely with, the Solent branch, our average attendance is now well over 100 across the year.
That's not necessarily all members of the branch.
If I could say that, Phil, because I gave a presentation.
Toulouse, yeah.
Well, we got Toulouse, yes, and our membership is minimal. But more significantly, I gave a lecture to the Solent branch, you may not know, last year, at the end
yes.
of last year. And there were there were 70 people present. Mm. And to begin with, they said, how many society members are there? The answer was 4.
Mm.
And they said, how many people are going to join the society? And the response was 0.
Mm.
But there were 70 people there, a lot of university people.
Yeah, this is my point, you see, yeah. that attendance at local meetings is not necessarily a gauge of the size of
well,
the branch, per se.
We had 370 at the last Toulouse branch, which was a combined lecture about the A350 by the chief test pilot and chief engineer.
And
I would say that the people involved with the society, well, probably permanent members are probably about half a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest, and some students. So we had about 20 students. We have a very active student because they're free. That's why.
A, it absolutely doesn't give me membership. Global membership, individual and corporate, is about number 2 on my stop list of things to do. Number 1 is around risk, as you all understand. It absolutely doesn't give me a problem that we may only have half a dozen out of 150 people at a lecture. Things have absolutely moved on in terms of that, and our open policy on lectures, which extends to most of the lectures here, not all lectures here, occasionally there are for security reasons, closed lectures, is hugely important, David, in enabling us to present to the Charity Commission and the report we do each year and measure
yes.
of our public benefit.
But we've always had open lectures. They've never been tied.
Some branches were pretty close. And 20 years ago, when I first joined the Solent branch, there weren't many non-members at most of the lectures. So it's changed. But in terms of what we do have, and I'm sure because we actually quote it, we normally quote the total number of lecture events organised by the society in a year,
mm-hmm.
and it's in the I can more or less work that out. 400. It's in the order of 30,000 to 40,000 individual events.
I have absolutely no doubt that the society is very well complying with the Charity Commission's requirements for the public good.
But we're also getting out to members. Again, you'll know because you set the system up, David. The Solent branch, the lectures it has depend entirely on the date.
Mm-hmm. What does Solent charge for a visitor?
Absolutely nothing.
Zero, I think.
Absolutely.
We charge zero at Toulouse.
I think in Derby it's £1 or £2, if you look at it as a member and you're getting 10 or 12 lectures and you're paying £110 for that relative to the value for money, and it, you know, maybe there's an opportunity there.
No, there's only one lecture a year that the branch would have charged for, and that's only that's our named lecture, and that's only if you want the buffet. Otherwise, the lecture's free.
But I live in an area where it's a 100-mile round trip minimum to attend a lecture Cambridge, or in Peterborough. That's 50 miles each way. I would like us to do more joint work. In my area, the AT, the MEX, the civils, the architects, CIPSI, all combined. This society is the main absentee. So what I would like to see is much more joint working at a local level. Than we
current chairman of Cambridge, Mike Gregory?
Mike Hawkins.
He's not chairman, is he?
Cambridge, for a very good example, I think the Bloodhound lecture last year was a joint.
They do join lectures.
Okay, if
you
live in Cambridge.
We'll try and get you a branch in
Peterborough.
Can't park in Cambridge to start with.
The Solent branch now has lectures that the subject depends on the date around the students and also the location. So when the students aren't around, we tend to go out to the Portsmouth area, the Solent, the SOMP, the postcodes. We make use of naval facilities at Collingwood, where they have the naval. So each of the branches is responsible for the operations within its area.
Yeah.
And tomorrow night, there's a named lecture at Cambridge.
But I'm not going to do a 100-mile round trip.
Right, but that's your call. Mm. The thing to do, of course, would be to speak with the branch chairman and see whether there's any possibility. But they do. I've probably got with me when I finish here, I'll have a quick look in my briefcase because I think I've got with me an example. A list of some of the major lectures they did last year.
Philip, did you have a
revisit an old chestnut, but I looked at this issue of who appoints auditors. I looked at several charities, including two large ones and two or three small ones. And without exception, they had audit committees, and the audit committee appointed the auditors. So if you need evidence, there's plenty of evidence that that is the case. I know that at the moment there's resistance to this idea, but it's certainly a well-practiced procedure.
Okay, I hear what you say. I reiterate that in this charity, the members appoint the auditors.
Well, I know that. No, that's but it's the recommendation. It's the recommendation. We know what through the mechanism.
I think it's highly unlikely. You want to come back with it?
You're pointing out what's best practice. Yeah.
Do you know how many auditors we've had in the last 10 years, Phil?
Two, I think.
One.
No, we changed, didn't we?
In 2003 or 2004.
2004.
Yeah.
So
I
remember.
2000. Yeah. I remember changing.
One external auditor in 10 years. Same. When you asked for advice as to whether who should appoint the external auditors, you went to the external auditors to get their advice.
On the process?
Absolutely not. So they recommended that you carry on with the same process.
They didn't recommend that you stayed on and carried on with the same person. They recommended that the appropriate people within the society to recommend to the membership who the auditors should be. Was the finance committee.
And that's all part of the problem. It's too cosy. Wrong. And that's what you've always got to be doing.
I mean, if I recommend, I mean, this is first your responsibility. In your next report to Board of Trustees, if you want to make that comment, you can. Mm-hmm.
You see, this auditing business extends externally, if you like, to the branches. Like, I know the Stolen branch, when I first came secretary, was in the midst of a huge spat between itself and the chairman of the branches committee. The chairman of the branches committee wanted to know why it was that every year
in our accounts, it showed that we were paying an accountant, an external accountant, to audit the branch account. And we knew the chairman of the branch's committee at that time was, oh, you should get a couple of branch members to do it. And in my view, that was not an independent audit. That's why we were paying, and why we still pay an external accountant.
Roger Small.
He's still there. He's been
doing it. The point is, you would just see, it would be argued that we should change it. But Roger does a great job. He's a proper accountant. He charges us 30 quid
for the last 50 years.
Can I thank you very much for coming along?
Well, not at all.
It is appreciated that you've given up your time to deal with the rail situation the way it is. So.
Yeah, and I'll straight back to Southampton because I'm off on holiday next week and I've got a mountain of work to clear. But what I want you all to understand is that we absolutely don't want a you and us situation between this board and the board of trustees. And I think what we've agreed today is that you will do what you think appropriate, working within the terms and conditions that we've agreed for you. And what I have undertaken, I'm doing it a long time, clearly, but I'm going to go. I have undertaken that we will look at, accept or explain methodology. What agreed? Good. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you, Anna.